anchor.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Rosalind Scott.
And I'm Ken Jones. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show will take your calls to talk about the GOP plan to phase out Medicare. At 9, on Alternative Radio, we'll hear from Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, author of An Indigenous People's History of the U.S. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily investigative news magazine. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Dee Mae Roberts speaks with actors from Artist Repertory Theater's A Civil War Christmas. At 11:30, it's Art Focus. Host Andre Middleton tells us about a new three-woman show called Drawing as Core. Thanks, KBOO members, for your ongoing support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Good night, Rosalind. Good night, Danielle.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Danielle.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Aftermath, part of the Brown Paper series produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs November 28th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. In Mary Burrell's 1919 one-act, John Thornton, a young black soldier who has served his country in World War I, comes home to rural South Carolina. His homecoming is disrupted when he learns that someone close to him has been lynched by a white mob. Again, that's Aftermath, produced by Triangle Productions, November 28th at 7 p.m. at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for the following three positions: Station Manager, Evening News and Public Affairs Director, and Director of Underwriting. To apply to one of these positions, send a cover letter and resume to hiring@kboo.org, or bring or mail your resume with cover letter to 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer the following question: why is KBOO important? Open until filled. Interviews will begin around December 9th. No phone calls, please. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. For more information, go to kboo.org. KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, the time is now 6:03 p.m.
To you.
This is Labor Radio you're listening to on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Nick Bubb, and with me tonight is...
Michael B.
Michael B., it's been a while. We're glad to have you back. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic. Give us a reminder for everybody listening. What's your background?
So my background is I'm a carpenter out of local 1503. I'm a community organizer who was pushing labor for Bernie here in the community, and I work on housing justice issues. We're working on trying to put together a union housing incentive program. Also do anti-fascist work.
That's fantastic. Speaking of anti-fascist, we'll be talking about Donald Trump, president-elect, tonight. It's well established the racism, xenophobia, homophobia. I'm missing more here, but not as much talked about is the effect that it's going to have on the working class. Many people were upset with the Democrats over the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but many have also forgotten that Republicans like to push so-called right-to-work legislation, which makes it so that a union cannot compel membership, makes it very hard for them to finance negotiations and other activities when they don't have money to do so. So that's one of the things that we could be facing under a Trump administration. What do you think about that?
I think it's particularly scary when it's combined with the force of neo-fascists on the streets. We're entering an era in the political discourse in America that we haven't seen since the late 80s, early 90s, with characters like Lon Mabon. If you grew up here, you might remember the Oregon Citizens Alliance and Lon Mabon. Well, he was a guy that funneled nonprofit and political action committee money to Aryan Nations, who then killed Amadou Diallo and attacked a Native American woman in Western Idaho, stabbed an African-American woman up at PSU. And then there was a national call out and anti-racists cleaned this town up and turned it into a liberal city. But back before that, it was a pretty scary place to be. And a lot of it had to do with the connection between funneling political action committee money that's not meant to go to racists to active hate groups. And we're beginning to see this again. Y'all are familiar with the Tea Party. Well, the Tea Party is, you know, directly in favor of right to work legislation. And what we're finding is that groups like Oregon Patriots, which is a Tea Party group here that does counter demonstrations against, you know, Black Lives Matter protesters, against, you know, the demonstrations that we're seeing against Trump. They're coming to these demonstrations and they're marching with white supremacists. They hold calendars. And just recently, we saw and had pictures of this white supremacist that's got white power tattooed all across his chin, just recently got out of prison, marching right alongside these quote unquote patriots. So what we believe is that these fellows are giving safe harbor to neo-fascists, to violent prison gang neo-fascists, and that we're once again entering this time where we're at risk of political money, money from the, you know, the political sphere being channeled into active hate groups.
And that's a terrifying thing. And part of the problem is there is power in names. You get a group that calls themselves patriots. Well, you think of the word patriot and like some people get washed over with the feeling of like, oh, country, you know. I mean, what's the Marine Corps motto? God, country, family, self, something to that effect. Absolutely. You know, so country, that's pretty high up there. And people hear that word. I was just it's just misleading in the same way that right to work legislation is misleading.
Exactly.
Because it's not a right to work. It's I mean, people call the response is right to work for less.
And, you know, you can, in some respect, identify some of these folks. They march with yellow and black as their colors, or yellow, black, and red.
So they're Pittsburgh Steelers fans, too.
I'm not sure. But, yeah, you know, they it's interesting. In the past, we've had groups like the Cascade Policy Institute arguing for water privatization. Shortly after Katrina, and also being behind the push to right to work here recently, okay, they have these people in their groups. They call themselves anarcho-capitalists. Well, just like the fellow that was waving a gun at the Black Lives Matter protest, had a big yellow and black flag on his wall, you know, identifying with this Eurocentric alt-right movement, they call it. It's another name for neo-Nazi. These are neo-Nazis in suits, is what they are. They are well-spoken, educated neo-Nazis in suits, and they're charismatic, and these people are being stacked up in D.C. Just recently, we saw these people going up in restaurants and cafes celebrating Donald Trump's victory by saying, Sig Heil.
Wow.
There's pictures and videos of this all over the internet, celebrating Donald Trump's victory with Sig Heils.
Yeah, I heard they were doing I don't even know what the salute is, the arm in the air as well. That's this terrifying time. So obviously there's protests. Everybody's aware of the protests. I mean, for myself, it's been disruptive in transportation.
Sure.
How do we funnel this into something that can overcome that kind of movement?
Well, I think particularly when it comes to the working class, we need to recognize the failure of our own democratic leadership. From the DNC to the leaderships of our unions, the baby boomer generation has got behind this neoliberal politics, which has really turned America off. You know, you look at the number of states that went state after state for Bernie Sanders, a candidate who fundamentally said Black Lives Matter, stood with Native Americans, was out there protesting for, no Dakota pipeline and supporting the indigenous peoples of this nation, on whose land we are on, he's out there and he's a solid brother. And I tell you what, state after state primaried and supported Bernie Sanders, and those very same states have gone for Donald Trump. So did these people suddenly, find the white power gospel and start Sig Heiling along with these alt-right creeps? Well, I'm not sure. I think that America, and a lot of people, they thought that the best way to protect their country was to go with this other guy because they knew what they were getting with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
But what they didn't know is that they were getting tricked. You got two bad options.
Right.
You can't win in that kind of situation.
No. What do we do now? I didn't vote for either of them. I'm stuck with one of them with the rest of everybody else.
That's
I voted
right.
for Jill Stein myself.
Me too. I mean, less than 2% of the population. They can't blame us when, 43% of the population didn't vote. They can't say this 2% or less that supported third-party candidates
right.
was...
Right, obviously. And in Oregon, our state went blue anyways, obviously.
That's right.
But what do we do? What do we do here moving forward? I mean, we got to have a plan. Even at my own union, we're like, so what's the plan?
Absolutely.
What are we gonna do? And everybody's quiet. Everybody's kind of waiting for somebody to take charge.
Well, I think that one thing that's coming up for a lot of us is, the night of the election, two blocks down from my house, a feller, he's an artist, a friend of my girlfriend's, he woke up to somebody crawling around his backyard with a 16-inch Bowie knife, a white feller with a hat on, crawling around the colon ain't working. Crawling around his backyard, checking his doors with a Bowie knife. 4 days later, I run into this feller in the grocery store. And, I run into him in the grocery store, and he is, he's got this T-shirt on with a big Bowie knife on it. And
wow.
And a big, NRA hat on. And I'm like...
The same guy.
And I tell you what, I took stills from that video, and I looked at him right, and I looked at him left, and who did I run into this guy? I run into this guy into the Quickie Mart on Albina and Killingsworth, and I was like, you, sir, are that guy. I mean, I didn't say anything to him. I was just like...
No,
I was freaked out.
Terrifying.
I had my two kids, and I'm just like... This is
okay. Well, it sounds like we actually have a caller that wants to talk about this as well. Tom, right. Are you there?
I'm here.
How are you, sir?
Not too bad.
Fantastic. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name's Tom. I'm with the Pacific Northwest Anti-Fascist Workers Collective.
Okay.
And we were talking with Mike earlier about some of the organizing we've been doing that Mike's been helping us with.
Awesome.
Little backdrop about me. I've been listening a little bit about what Mike was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big problem with this back in the, in the 80s and the 90s with, Mogheda Sarah and Tom Metzger. Which is all stuff that I was involved in, but what we're looking at now looks a lot different than that.
Right.
And how do we fight that looks different as well? So some of the things we've been doing is trying to organize through our unions.
right,
to build an anti-fascist cadre within different unions, so that we can change the culture on the job sites, which reaches a lot of people that are more rural. I think in the past we really reached people that were in the cities.
Yes.
So with job site organizing, one thing we're able to do is we can definitely reach rural people. So, we can also change the culture on the job site by smashing that down.
So tell us, for the people out there listening, some people might be wondering, what does it mean to be fascist? What does it mean to be anti-fascist? Can you give us a brief description of that?
Absolutely. So to be fascist, I mean, we see a lot of that in the Donald Trump policies now, you know, with the racism, the authoritarianism, you know, the different forms of oppression that we're going to see coming out of that administration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be anti-fascist is to combat that on all levels. And really, capitalism is one of the things that really props a lot of that oppression up. But, like, outright fascism we haven't really seen. You know, we've seen, you know, economic racism and social racism and organized racism, but now what we have is a government that's coming in with all of these policies. So it looks different in how you fight it. You know, back in the day, it was easy. You knew who your enemies were. They were Nazi skinheads in the street.
Right.
And you could identify your enemy easily. Now it's a little bit harder to identify.
Well, one thing that we are doing in the Carpenters, for example, is we're working on passing solidarity motions.
Mm-hmm.
Solidarity motions like solidarity with the striking prisoners. Mm-hmm. In our Constitution, it says that we are against, in the UBC Constitution, it says that we are against compulsory labor, slavery.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, exactly.
You know, contract prison labor.
Yes.
Right. And so we use that to pass a motion in solidarity with the IWW strike, prison strike. And, you know, we're also pushing for solidarity with the indigenous folks, the Standing Rock out there as well, against the Dakota Pipeline. And this is the kind of thing that has a discerning quality and helps us find people that we can work with within our union and form a cadre.
That's great. That's the kind of organizing that I think can help get everybody on the same page. And when people are talking about it, then action can be taken.
Absolutely. And I think that if we learn from history, if we mobilize labor has a lot of power. And
Yeah. We
can use the power of labor to stand in the way of a lot of these policies that are coming our way.
So how does fascism fit into a workplace? Like what's happening in a factory where people are working together when fascism is reigning?
Well, Benito Mussolini said that fascism is the marriage of corporations and the state. So when you see these pushes for corporate control of the government, whether it's lobbyists running the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, or, you know, Tea Party activists running the Bureau of Labor and Industries.
Right.
Right. And pushing for right to work and to strip workers of overtime pay. These are the kind of things that you see, you know, you see in an authoritarian government. And I think also what workers have to be wary of is the internecine disputes between labor organizations being capitalized on by these fascists, because they are very adept. You saw Donald Trump in the election
mm-hmm.
take his enemies and more or less imply that he would give them a cabinet position. And then he would pit one potential rival against another. And then 2 days later, he would attack them both. And it made them look weak and him strong. And it didn't help that the Democratic, you know, front runner was saying, oh, this guy's the big threat, and propping him up too. But you see, they take our enemies and they prop them up and pit them against us to weaken us. Right. And then they attack us both.
Right. Yeah. When we're divided on issues that they love to divide us on, then we can't see the real problem to negotiate with the gazillionaires, if you will.
Right.
No, yeah, and that's the foundation of capitalism and of fascism is you break us into little groups.
Yeah.
And you get us all, you know, fighting over straw dog issues. You know, not all of them are straw dog issues, but they separate the class, and if the class can't unite, then we can't put any kind of meaningful resistance against them.
Absolutely.
And this is why anti-racist solidarity is particularly important, because if you look at how the economy is broken down, the disparate impacts, how they affect women, how they affect minorities, mm-hmm. you know, the impacts of capitalism disproportionately affect the communities that have the least power,
right?
And that is part of that division, which is why it's important for all of us, you know, not just as a moral justice issue to address, right. you know, disparate pay between men and women, but it's also a class issue for us to address these identity issues, because they're not identity issues. They are class issues, right? It hurts yes. us all for us to be divided in that way.
Right. Working class is working class. We should all stick together.
Oh, absolutely. We have to have class solidarity amongst us against, you know, all of these forms of oppression. I think a lot of people don't understand how they intersect and they're connected. Mm-hmm. And if we get people to see that, we can put together more meaningful, effective resistance. And one of the things that was really big, you know, in the early days of our country, that the labor of power, when the unions were stronger, we were able to shut stuff down.
Right.
Hell yeah.
If we can get back to where we can shut stuff down.
Like get them reds.
Yeah, like the longshoremen, right? They can take down, you know, the entire coast as far
Absolutely.
As shipping's concerned.
If you put all of the trades in there, and not just the trades, but, yeah. you know, any of the unions, you have to put a general strike up. Like, they have to sit down. They have to come to the table and listen to us. We have a voice.
So you,
but how do we get there?
Do you think we can expect to see right-to-work legislation presented and immediately when Donald Trump takes the reins?
Fully expecting that. I think that he's going to do anything he can to crush organized labor.
I think what we're going to see, like, you know, like the era of Oregon Citizens Alliance and, mm-hmm. you know, the ascendancy of Reagan, you know, what we saw was they pushed for mandatory minimum sentences. They pushed for laws that criminalized low-level offenses so that they could divide and break up communities. Any community of resistance then could then be targeted through these laws that kind of gave them a blank check to attack minorities or to attack the working poor for organizing, right? And so I think what we're hearing now is coming down the pike is they're looking to criminalize these protests against Trump
right.
to make them a Class C felony. I think that within the first 120 days, we'll likely see something like that. We'll also see a push for, you know, Supreme Court nominations if that isn't resolved. And it likely won't be because Congress isn't going to work with Obama to resolve Supreme Court nominations.
Right.
So they'll try to get somebody on the Supreme Court who will be to the right of anything we've ever seen. Right. And that's really going to be a scary dynamic, because you remember in this country, there was a time when Jim Crow was legal.
Right.
Right. And the Supreme Court is the ultimate check of that. I mean, there's, you know, the workers' power and, you know, you know, the tree of liberty and revolution. And then there's the legal structure, and the legal structure is stops with the Supreme Court.
Do you think he could potentially nominate somebody even further to the right than Anton Scalia?
He could nominate a fascist. He will nominate a fascist to the Supreme Court. That's what he will push for, is a fascist on the Supreme Court. And then he will push for criminalization of low-level protests. Okay? And then he will likely, then he will go after minority communities, who will go after the people protesting in the streets, and this will create a culture of fear. And then he will go after labor. He will set the stage for this larger attack. And from then, breaking up labor will give him the capacity to target immigrants in a much bigger way than he is, because we are the democratic check. We are the balance that says, okay, government, if you act outside the bounds of your jurisdiction, labor will hold you accountable. But if he breaks labor, just like Hitler did.
Right. Yeah, he broke up the unions early in his...
And that will be his goal, because he's a fascist. And he will try to pit us against each other.
The first thing he did was the media and the labor with Hitler. We've already seen, like, the state level, they're already trying to outlaw the protests and make them Class C felony.
Yeah.
There's already some news going around that they're trying to strip the time and a half overtime that Obama put in for people that make $47,000 or less a year.
They're going to try and strip that already?
They're going after that, and he's not even in power yet.
That was a huge win. That was a huge win for workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and there's already legislation being formed up right now to take that down as soon as it becomes, within 60 days of it becoming effective. Wow.
So one thing we need to guard ourselves against is white identity politics. Mm-hmm. We are not the white working class. We are the working class.
We are the working class. That's right.
Right? And what you're going to find is that these Tea Party people, they will again and again pound the drums of this message. The white working class is under attack. Well, it ain't the white working class. It's the entire working class, because you either have a class or an identity,
right?
And you know, they do this deliberately to divide us, to take away our class power, to take away our union power, and pit us against each other.
Well, sure, when you can see an immigrant as the problem instead of the person that has all the money and doesn't want to share it as the problem,
like then, Trump,
then the gazillionaires win.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so frustrating.
I think when they realize, I mean, the thing is like, they're, why don't you take and fight for rights of the immigrant laborers, you know, as a class?
Yeah.
Then rather than go after poor people that are trying to make a living, go after the employer. And people don't see that it's this capitalist class that is using all of us against each other to drive everybody's wages down.
Mm-hmm. Well, they use misinformation.
Well, and the Democrats, you know, the Democrats have this kind of neoliberal charity response, and they're kind of like, well, we can hide in our basements. You know, we can declare this or that city a sanctuary city while the rest of the country is raked over the freaking coals.
Right.
And I tell you what, you got a House, you got a Senate, and eventually a Supreme Court controlled by fascists, and no place will be safe. You know, if they're funneling money outside of the political sphere into supporting militias and hate groups that are targeting activists like the worst times of the 60s. Nobody will be safe.
Right.
And ultimately, it's going to be up to us to develop the class power and the ability to defend our communities.
So if you could give one suggestion to people on there on how to combat this, what would be your suggestion? How would you try to motivate the people listening right now to make a difference?
There's a lot of different levels there. I think that one is, you know, organize your workplace. Find mm-hmm. a union, work with your union, and mobilize your workplace. You need to get a union in there. Number two is knock off the silence. Silence is acceptance. There's so much stuff that I just read a report the other day in mm-hmm. Starbucks, you know, up in Seattle, this guy yelling all these racist stuff at two people in Starbucks, and everybody just sat there. Mm. That's unacceptable.
Right.
And as a people, and that's regardless of class, as a people, we need to stand up and not allow this type of stuff to happen, because if they feel comfortable, they grow.
We have
to find ways to make them feel uncomfortable every place. They need to be met every single place that they show up, and they need to be confronted. And that's how you change it. It's scary, like, you know, for people that aren't used to that type of confrontation. But
Right. There's
so much at stake. Learn some self-defense, you know, or run around and rally up people around you so you have numbers that stand up to it.
Well,
silence is what allows this to grow.
We're just about out of time. I've got a few announcements to make, but I want to say thanks to Tom from the Pacific Northwest Anti-Fascist Workers Collective and Michael B. from the Carpenters Local for coming on the air with us. In labor news, James P. Hoffa was reelected narrowly as the president general of the Teamsters Union. Some members wanted change after years of concessions and lost ground. Hoffa has been general president of the Teamsters since 1998. This reelection will keep him in power through 2021. That's 23 years of running one of the largest unions, representing 1.4 million workers. Voice actors of SAG-AFTRA, that's the Screen Actors Guild and American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, are still on strike. They want a secondary compensation for games that sell over 2 million copies. The amount they're seeking is equal to one union scale per 2 million sold. That's currently $3,300. Management claims that will put them at a competitive disadvantage in a market that they only have a 20% share of. The union responds that claim is disingenuous because the games that sell more than 2 million copies, the union share is nearly 100%. Members also request transparency. They'd like to know what role they're taking before signing on, and they'd like